Welcome to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This month's agency is the Department of Health and Human Services.
I'm Lauren Larson. My guest today is David Muntz, Principal Deputy National Coordinator at the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology at HHS. Welcome, David. Thanks for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
Just to get started here, tell us, as the Principal Deputy National Coordinator, what is your role at ONC, and tell us about your job?
Well, every day is a different day. Very exciting. I have four different groups that I have responsibility for. That includes the Programs and Policy Office, the Office of the Chief Scientist, or Technology and Science as we call it, the Office of Evaluation, Analysis, and Modeling, and the Office of Communications.
How has your experience in private health care prepared you for your role at ONC?
Well, I'm very fortunate to have had a very wide range of experience over the last 40 years working in health information technology, and so my entire career has been spent there. And what I've been able to do is write electronic health records, then install electronic health records from all of the major vendors. And the experience is radically different as you move from product to product, and so I've had a great breadth of experience. Also, I have a lot of friends in the business, and we've shared our experiences, and so what I hope I bring to ONC is not just my perspective, but the perspective of the community and the challenges that people who are having to deploy electronic health records and health information technology are experiencing, and to be both ears and a voice for the people that we represent.
You've been consistently recognized nationally for innovation in information technology. What are you doing to stay ahead of the game and continue to consistently reach new heights in IT?
The funny thing about innovation is that it is usually credited to an individual. For example, Edison invented a light bulb, but that characterization would be untrue. What I see myself doing and what I've done in the past is to try to foster an environment that encourages innovation. And so I am not the person who has to be the innovator, but I should be the person who is challenging the way that we do things. And as we deploy electronic health records, we have to think about doing work in a radically different way. And the good fortune that we have is that there are a lot of people that are inventing new technologies, but just because you have a new technology doesn't mean that you should use it. So our job has been to figure out how you change the work processes or the life processes of the people who are engaged in installing electronic technology, and figure out not a way to repeat what it is that you've been doing in normal life, but how you're going to do something in a new and creative way. And so trying to foster that environment is what I see my job has been, and it's what I see ONC's job is currently. So it's very compatible with what I've done in the past. And so we've enjoyed a lot of successes at fostering innovation.
Where do you see innovation taking the biggest strides?
I think one of the other areas that where innovation occurs is really going to occur in the data collection activities. We talk an awful lot about research, and we talk about using new technologies. We talk about creating new features and functions. But I think that there's really not enough conversation yet, though it's starting to happen, about the use of data. And we have begun to promote it, and we do have committees that are studying it. But when you make data available to people, there are patterns that people will recognize and want to prove or disprove. And when I started my career, I worked in a cancer and research institute, and people would come to me to prove or disprove a hypothesis, and they would say, well, I believe that this factor has this effect. Can you help me statistically prove that? And I was a biostatistician when I started, and so my job was to run programs that did that. Well, somebody came to me one day and said, I really can't figure out why somebody's having a better result, but I know that a portion of the study group that we are engaged with is having a better outcome. Can you just run and find out what the factors are? And I thought, well, that's not good science. And yet I was a young biostatistician, so I did what they expected me to do. And I ran the report, and it tested every factor against every other factor, at least a limited number of factors, to see what the best outcome was. It looked at the top third of the groups that had a great outcome and looked at the bottom third that had a bad outcome. We eliminated the things that were they were shared. And all of a sudden, we discovered patterns that we didn't know or wouldn't have looked for. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I just got the greatest lesson in my life. It's not what you know or suspect that can give you the best value. It's what you don't know and what you wouldn't otherwise recognize that can give you the greatest value. And now we're generating data that really will become the real important asset for all of us. And we will be able to use new technologies in ways that had never been done before to discover things that we didn't know were apparent to a computer. And people talk about big data, and big data is probably a often misused term, but when I'm talking about big data, I'm talking about an entirely different approach. We used to start with data at one point and read all the way through it. Big data has new technologies that allow us to do massively parallel processing or even parallel processing and to come up with intermediate ideas, and we don't have to wait as long. We can look at much larger volumes of data, and we can discover patterns that we weren't looking for. And because we're creating so much information about everybody, unlike the experiments in the past where you had to define the population, we're going to be able to use the population as a whole. And we used to see little signals that would come up as part of the population, and we'd dismiss them as noise. Well, the fact is there were patterns in those uncommon signals that occurred, and we should in the future be able to say, oh, my gosh, we've got a pattern that's making that's reaching a low threshold, but it's a pattern nonetheless. And so the research that we will be able to do associated with data is extraordinary, and we will be able to help society in ways that we can't even imagine today, but we know that it can happen. So it's very exciting to be a part of the effort to collect those data.
We have to take a short break now. You're listening to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Cancer claims more than 570,000 lives each year and costs more than $102 billion in care expenses alone. ICF International plays a role in every aspect of cancer data collection and dissemination, helping clients track this deadly disease across the country. They provide researchers, including those working at the National Institutes of Health, as well as health officials, medical professionals, and the public, with information they need to better fight cancer or prevent it altogether. To have the greatest impact, you must tackle the most important problems. All over the world, ICF International applies strategy, science, and technology to help clients achieve measurable results, including healthier people and vibrant communities. This is ICF International, and their work helps government health programs improve the quality of life. Find out how ICF's informatics, research, and communication work helps make a difference at ICFI.com.
Welcome back. I'm Lauren Larson. I'm speaking with David Muntz, Principal Deputy National Coordinator at the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology. David, public input is important to ONC. How is that collected and implemented in developing infrastructure?
Public input is absolutely critical to what it is that we're doing. One of my favorite expressions, you need to learn to lead with your ears. And one of the things that we have that is part of a formal structure is the FACA committees, the Federal Advisory Committee Act, set them up. And we have populated two different groups, one that focuses on policy and one that focuses on standards, with some very bright people who represent the world outside of government. And they come together and we pose questions to them. And what we are talking about mostly is meaningful use. But what they've done is allow us to really have meaningful conversations, which I think precedes the deployment of meaningful use. And it's an open forum, and the public gets a chance to listen and to react and to participate broadly, and I think that's really critical. So one group is focused on policy, one group is focused on standards, and they have set up work groups that focus on particular areas of interest. And so we get broad participation in that way. The other thing that we are fond of doing is going out and engaging in a dialogue with our users by speaking at events. And the speaking is not really just an opportunity for us to talk about what we're thinking about, but for people to react to what we're doing. And so that process is very useful and allows us to, again, get into meaningful conversations about what we're doing and how it's impacting them.
What are some of the most successful initiatives that have come out of the I2 program?
Well, one of the most successful activities in which we are engaged is called Text for Health. That's TXT, the number 4 and the word health. And what that allowed people to do was to interact using their cell phones as a mode of getting information that was needed and providing information about their particular health status to caregivers. The other one that's recent that was just announced is something that was very successful done by the Veterans Administration and the Department of Defense, and it's called the Blue Button Initiative, and it's like the name implies. There is a blue button that appears on the screen, and the veterans and military families were able to enroll and get copies of their health records downloaded from the systems that were being used by the DOD and the VA. And more than 1 million people have already participated and done that. And yet there was a limitation on what they were doing. Most of the downloads were done in text format and could be used very easily by the patients, their families, and their physicians, but weren't able to be incorporated into other technologies. So we've signed an agreement with the Veterans Administration to take over the shepherding of that activity. And what we want to do is to allow people using other than just the VA and DOD systems the ability to download information that is going to be kept in a discrete manner so that it can interact with personal health records and other systems and put the patient in control of their documents and essentially allow them to become custodians of the electronic health record. And that solves a lot of problems. It addresses the issues of security, confidentiality, and privacy. It makes the patient more engaged, and we know from results that a more engaged patient has far better outcomes than one who is not. And it opens up the process to people who really are anxious to be in control of their own health.
How do you set realistic goals when planning IT initiatives on an ever-tightening budget?
Great question. The budget really is an expression of your strategic interests. And so regardless of what a budget is, it's never going to be enough to do all the things that we could do or all the things that we want to do. And so we have a process set up by which we look at what our strategic initiatives are. We rank order them according to a variety of characteristics. And then we arrange them in a particular order, and then we spend as much money as we are allowed to do. The real challenge for us is to help people explain all the benefits that really do accrue from investment in health information technology. And unlike many other investments that are traditionally made in healthcare, where you make an investment in a particular area and the area that benefits is that area, when you invest in health IT, the paybacks, the benefits, are realized across the board in places you would never anticipate, or even if you do anticipate, are not associated with health IT. So the question is, for every dollar invested, what is the payback across the environment, not just in the health IT department? And we are fundamentally changing the way that people are able to conduct healthcare, and that promotes better health for the individual, better health for the population, and allows us to adopt and use new forms of payment that should help make the healthcare system more efficient and more cost effective. And so we believe that every dollar that is being spent in health IT, particularly in ONC, is trying to bring the maximum value. The other thing that we look around to do is, how can we collaborate with other members within the federal environment who are also interested in trying to promote a variety of health-related objectives? And we do an awful lot of investing with them. So we have interagency agreements with a variety of organizations. We also work with approximately 15 other agencies, both inside and outside of Health and Human Services, to ensure that we are collaborating in an effective way so that we're amplifying the activities in not just our areas, but in their areas as well. And we think that we've been very good stewards of the very small budgets that we have.
We'll take another short break. You're listening to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Cancer claims more than 570,000 lives each year and costs more than $102 billion in care expenses alone. ICF International plays a role in every aspect of cancer data collection and dissemination, helping clients track this deadly disease across the country. They provide researchers, including those working at the National Institutes of Health, as well as health officials, medical professionals, and the public, with information they need to better fight cancer or prevent it altogether. To have the greatest impact, you must tackle the most important problems. All over the world, ICF International applies strategy, science, and technology to help clients achieve measurable results, including healthier people and vibrant communities. This is ICF International, and their work helps government health programs improve the quality of life. Find out how ICF's informatics, research, and communication work helps make a difference at ICFI.com.
Welcome back. I'm Lauren Larson, speaking with David Muntz, Principal Deputy National Coordinator at the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology. Now, David, earlier you mentioned payment reform. I wonder, what are the challenges of implementing health IT for healthcare providers to achieve the goals of payment reform, like helping hospitals lower their readmission rates and implement programs like affordable care organizations, primary care medical homes, and other care coordination programs?
Actually, I cannot imagine how you could conduct healthcare without health information technology. We used to make a comparison when we talked about a health IT, and we would talk about it as the nervous system of the body or the skeleton of the body. And I don't think that comparison works anymore. I think we're more like the messenger RNA that exists within every single cell within an organization. And that's the way I feel about how healthcare is organized. There is simply too much information that is being generated from the patient, because we have so many different ways of measuring what's going on in a patient's life. We have so many references that are produced because people are learning more about medical information, creating medical knowledge that we have to make available. And I can't see how you could give access to the data that's being generated on a patient, to the data that's in the press or at least available via reference, and would marry those two up in such a way that you would be able to give a patient the best options without having health IT. And so the ability to do that and do it well is critical, I think, to all providers in the new environment. And the better that the job is that we do of deploying that, I think the better the healthcare system will be. A paper is very constraining in fact that only one person can use it at one time. Electronics allow multiple access to appropriate people under secured, in a secured environment that let you do things with data that you could never have done before. It allows the providers to change the work processes that they have. It allows the patients to change, if you will, the equivalent, which I would call the life processes that they have, and to manage their health in a better way. It creates the opportunity for collaboration between physicians that we didn't have before, because geographic barriers are no longer an issue. It allows the patients to participate in community events in ways that they could never have done before. And so I just can't see a world anymore where electronics don't play a bigger and bigger role and allow more and more flexibility.
How has ONC met the challenge of interoperability in electronic health records?
Well, interoperability is the biggest challenge I think that we face, and it's the reason I think government is involved in this activity. And it's absolutely important that we be able to interchange information in an effective way, in a meaningful way. And what we have done is tried to take a little different approach than what some of the other countries have done. Generally speaking, what we do is, or what other organizations have done, is they take a top-down approach and they try to imagine what is going to be best for the community, and then they set up a standard and hope that people can adjust to that. But the challenge with taking a top-down approach is you have to create a complete picture before you're able to deploy it. And what we've done is take a different kind of approach, and we've involved the community in doing that. So we have said we would like to create building blocks at the foundation, and we would like to involve the community in that activity. And so we have 500 people who are active participants, and that means they participate in meetings on a regular basis. We have more than 2,000 people involved in the activities on a somewhat regular basis. And we have meetings where we look at a portfolio of standards and talk about how to develop that. And we have the community actually doing the work, where we are doing the administration associated with it. And so they will create standards that are community-based. And if we have a good feedback loop, and we do, then we're able to deploy a portion of the picture, make sure that it works, make the adjustments that are necessary when you move from the bench into the real world, and therefore don't jeopardize the entire structure and are able to make what I consider incremental successes. When we moved from stage one to stage two of meaningful use, we were actually able to raise the bar in that, and we now are requiring that patients be able to view, download, or transmit records from one provider to another, and that transmit requires interoperability. So we're going to get the patients engaged in making sure that the physicians are going to be exchanging information as well. And so we have all participants in the community engaged. And I have great hope for what will occur.
Okay, David, I've got one more for you. What has been the most fulfilling part of your career as a public servant in healthcare?
I think the most gratifying part is the people with whom I work. I had no sense of just how brilliant and dedicated, hardworking the people are. And if I had to say there's a pretty common characteristic, I would say that most of the people I meet work with servant hearts. They're trying to do what they believe is best for the United States and for the world at large. And though I certainly worked with some brilliant people in the private sector, I think the fact that we share that almost to a person is unique and almost selfless. So I've been very gratified by the staff and the people I get to work with. And I consider it a privilege to come to work every day to help represent and work with them.
That's all the time we have today. Thanks for listening, and special thanks to David Muntz, Principal Deputy National Coordinator for the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Lauren Larson. You've been listening to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This month's agency is the Department of Health and Human Services. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month. Agency of the Month, Wednesdays in October at 11 a.m. only on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com.
You've been listening to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. This month's agency is the Department of Health and Human Services. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month. Agency of the Month, Wednesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.